Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson, along with Ryan Dobson and Luann Crane.
Thanks for joining us on this Family Talk broadcast today. We have something pretty unique planned, which I know you're going to enjoy. Doctor, I understand you'd like to share a little something about one of your favorite historical characters.
Luann, for those who visit my office at Family Talk in Colorado Springs, they'll notice very quickly an entire wall dedicated to the memory of Winston S. Churchill. Mm-hmm. He's one of my all-time heroes and favorite military and political leaders. On display there is a huge painting of Churchill, which, again, is one of my prized possessions. Mm-hmm. Churchill was, as most of our listeners know, the Prime Minister of Britain for many years, and he rallied his countrymen during World War II when all appeared to be lost in response to the armies of Germany. His speeches are so inspiring, and they gave hope and courage to those who thought that nation was doomed, including those in the United States. People around the world thought Britain was a goner because France had fallen in 6 weeks. And why would Britain, without the French armies, be able to withstand Hitler's onslaught? And at that moment, Churchill stepped up and gave hope to the peoples of the free world everywhere.
If there was anybody who ever stepped in for such a time as this, it was that gentleman. Mm-hmm. Doctor, that painting is enormous. It really does command a presence. How did you come to get that painting?
Well, it's an interesting story because we were in California, in a little desert town called Desert Falls, right near Palm Springs. And we were walking through a mall, and there was a little art shop, a little gallery there, and that picture was in the window, and I was captivated. Mm. It's a painting that was a copy of a photograph where Winston Churchill was very angry because they had just taken away his cigar, and he has that look on his face. But I wanted that painting, and it was $3,000, which was far too much money, and Shirley and I had a little argument about it, and she was pretty sure I didn't want it, and I was pretty sure I did. She was afraid that we were going to put it over the bed.
Yeah,
and that's
right.
Not what I had in mind for it. But anyway, she won the argument and I didn't buy it. But our board of directors heard about this and they took up a collection and got it for $2,000. And when our new campus was dedicated, they presented it to me and I've had it on the wall ever since.
Doctor, I can certainly understand your admiration for this gentleman, but why do you have it in such a prominent place? You can't miss it when you walk into your area.
Well, there's symbolism related to it, Luann. As he stood firm when it was so dark, as I just described, and when there seemed to be no hope, I have at times felt like I was in that position, not with that kind of prominence. But there have been times in the last 20 years when the battle to defend righteousness in the culture, to fight for the unborn child, to fight for the traditional marriage and its understanding as being between one man and one woman, was very lonely. Because sometimes Christian people didn't seem to get it. I've had people stop me on the street, even as far back as the mid-1980s, and say, I don't understand why you're excited about these things. What are the problems? So it was lonely at times, as I'm sure Winston Churchill was lonely at a time. And for Winston Churchill, the one hope that he had that Britain would be able to beat Germany was that the Americans would get involved. And when Pearl Harbor occurred, it was a fantastic day for him because for the first time he knew that he would probably win. Mm-hmm. And that was the only way. Well, I have felt that way about the Church of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. Until it decides that it has a stake in the defense of the unborn child, when partial birth abortion, where you suck the brains out of a child, is a wicked, evil thing that has to be an affront to God, until the church sees that as evil and also gets involved in the fight, there was no hope that people like me could win. Mm-hmm. And so that picture was a symbol to me to never, never, never give up, even when it was dark. because you never know what God's going to do.
So that's a fitting backdrop for your October newsletter, which is absolutely inspiring. Let me say quickly, if listeners haven't signed up yet to get your monthly letter, they definitely want to do that. They can do so online at myfamilytalk.com or give us a call, 877-732-6825. Doctor, would you share that with us here on the rest of this Family Talk broadcast?
I would like to do it because it's very relevant to what we just talked about, but also to where we are as a nation being right around the corner from the national elections. And that's where I start with my monthly letter.
All right, let's hear that.
Dear friends, greetings to you all. As you're aware, this country is only a few weeks away from one of the most important elections in history. On November the 2nd, candidates for Congress, governors, state representatives, and local officials will be chosen throughout the nation. Together, these men and women will have the power to promote the general welfare and protect the Constitution, or to damage them irreparably. At stake are policies that should concern millions of Americans, including federal funding for abortions, amnesty for illegal aliens, open homosexuality in the military, further assaults on religious liberty, and universal health care legislation amounting to rationing and the denial of medical services for older Americans. The possibility of death panels looms before us. $500 billion in Medicare funding are expected to be siphoned from the budget. All of these issues and many more will hang in the balance early next month. If the wrong people are retained or put in office, the indiscriminate taxing, borrowing, and spending practices of the last 5 years will continue unabated. That will undermine the financial integrity of the family and leave the nation severely weakened. Now, none of these major concerns are really new, however. Nations grow weak and die for many of the same reasons, usually related to poor leadership. I've been reading an outstanding book that deals with some of the issues that we're facing, which mirror the problems of the 20th century. It is titled Churchill by Himself, edited by Richard Langworth. The book presents 350,000 of Sir Winston's 15 million published words, including 600 pages of quotations, aphorisms, speeches, letters, and papers from his school days at Harrow to his death at his London home in 1965. He was 90 years old. If you've listened to our broadcast through the years, you've heard me express great admiration for this intellectual giant. He served for 5 decades in the British government and was prime minister during the challenging and bloody days of World War II. I was a child at that time, and I heard my father and other adults referring with awe to the man who stood alone against the Nazi menace. I grew up wanting to know more about this indomitable leader. And that's been a lifelong quest. Sir Winston was a prolific reader with a photographic memory, which explains the breadth of his literary genius. Much of it is captured in Churchill by Himself, a compendium of wisdom, wit, history, government, and philosophy. What strikes me is how amazingly relevant his perspectives and pronouncements are to our world today. The challenges we face are in many regards recycled and repackaged from an earlier era. Now that brings me to the point of this letter. Churchill's recorded and written words stand in stark contrast to the policies and beliefs of the current President of the United States, Barack Obama. They couldn't be farther apart in most instances. For example, President Obama and his administration believe that when an economy falters, the government should increase taxes and spend like there's no tomorrow. Doing so will supposedly bring recovery. It's called Keynesian economics, and it never works. This is what Churchill wrote. Can a people tax themselves into prosperity? Can a man stand in a bucket and lift himself up by the handle? And the next. Taxes are an evil, a necessary evil, but still an evil. And the fewer of them we have, the better. And another, when you borrow money from another country for the sacred purpose of national rehabilitation, it's wrong to squander it upon indulgences. That third quote seems to condemn the concept of a massive stimulus package, which in the Obama era has been funded by loans mostly from China of over $1 trillion and spent on a shameful array of pork. It became a slush fund for those seeking re-election. How I wish more of the American people and their congressional leaders understood the straightforward principles Sir Winston articulated in these three quotes. It is foolish to believe that a government can solve an economic crisis by taxing and spending itself into prosperity. If that were possible, every poor country in the world would confiscate the financial holdings of its people and waste it on pork and projects and programs motivated by political power. The predictable end to such wild spending is not national wealth, it's bankruptcy. And that's where President Obama appears to be taking us, as he and his friends in Congress are burning their way through the accumulated wealth, past and present, of the most prosperous nation in the history of the world. The national debt stands now at $13 trillion. The projected deficit for the next 10 years is another $11 trillion, with a combined national debt of $24 trillion or more. That's not sustainable. It was $4 trillion in the year 2000. Present projections are only the beginning of our economic troubles. Medicare and Social Security are almost broke. Anticipated spending on cap and trade to address the global warming myth and further bailouts and giveaways and redistributions are beyond comprehension. All of this spending is on the table less than 2 years into the new administration. Sadly, we do appear to be on our way to the poorhouse. Frankly, I shudder to think of what U.S. bankruptcy would mean for the stability of the world. Gone would be America's ability to defend itself and the democracies against tyranny and subjugation. We live in a dangerous world where biological, chemical, nuclear, and conventional weapons are proliferating rapidly, and where electromagnetic pulse bombs may already be in the hands of our enemies. Evil dictators such as Ahmadinejad from Iran have already announced their intention of incinerating the nation of Israel. America must also be destroyed if those seeking world domination are to have their way. Have we forgotten the lessons of 9/11 already? Churchill wrote, "If you will not fight for the right when you can easily win without bloodshed, if you will not fight when your victory will be sure and not too costly, you may come to the moment when you will have to fight with all the odds against you and only a precarious chance of survival. There may even be a worst case. You may have to fight when there is no hope of victory, because it is better to perish than live as slaves." He also wrote, and this was back in 1934, "Wars come suddenly. I have lived through a period when one looked forward, as we do now, with anxiety and uncertainty to what would happen in the future. Suddenly, something did happen. Tremendous, swift, overpowering, irresistible." And of course, that was 1934, looking forward to 1939 when World War II broke out. Only a strong military gives us any hope of survival in such a world. But as we all know, modern militaries are horrendously expensive to develop and maintain, and they cannot be supported by nations in financial ruin. Furthermore, there's little motivation to support our armed forces. Indeed, when the president wanted to demonstrate his fiscal responsibility to the media, that was in 2009, he selected a tiny fraction of the federal budget to be cut. guess what he considered expendable? You guessed it. Half of the programs to be eliminated came from the military, including a new jet fighter, the F-22, that was already designed and ready for production, and a vital missile defense system. We desperately need another Winston Churchill in either political party with the common sense to support our military. And now some quotes that mean a lot to me. Let's review what the old prime minister had to say about socialism versus free enterprise and capitalism. He wrote, "The inherent vice of capitalism is the unequal sharing of blessings." Some people have more than others. "The inherent virtue of socialism is the equal sharing of miseries." Isn't that terrific, Luhin? That's really what it comes down to.
It really does.
Yeah. Well, the next quote was also about socialism. "The elimination of the profit motive and of self-interest as a practical guide in the myriad transactions of daily life will restrict, paralyze, and destroy British ingenuity, thrift, contrivance, and good housekeeping at every stage of our life and production, and will reduce all our industries from a profit-making to a loss-making process." Yet another, "Socialism is the philosophy of failure, the creed of ignorance, and the gospel of envy." And another, "The choice is between two ways of life, between individual liberty and state domination, between concentrations of ownership in the hands of the state and the extension of ownership over the widest number of individuals, between the dead hand of monopoly and the stimulus of competition, between the policy of increasing restraint and a policy of liberating energy and ingenuity, between a policy of leveling down and a policy of opportunity for all to rise upwards from a basic standard." I would hope, Luann, that people would obtain a copy of this letter. And in fact, we're going to send it to those on our mailing list, or get a CD of my reading it and study that paragraph particularly, because it is very relevant. You really have a choice between two paths, and one of them is socialism, the other free enterprise and capitalism, and one is better than the other. Here's another. "You may try to destroy wealth and find that all you have done is to increase poverty." Isn't that where we are right now? Mm-hmm. We've got more poverty than we've had in many, many years, because we have chosen principles of socialism. "When I see the present socialist government," and he's referring to the British government, "when I see the present socialist government denouncing capitalism in all its forms, mocking with derision and contempt the tremendous free enterprise capitalistic system on which the mighty production of the United States is founded, I cannot help feeling that as a nation, we're not acting honorably or even honestly." Referring to the system of checks and balances, which our founding fathers incorporated into the Constitution, and frankly, that we've lost now, Churchill said this, "The British race has always abhorred arbitrary and absolute government in every form. The great men who founded the American Constitution expressed this same separation of authority in the strongest and most durable form. Not only did they divide executive, legislative, and judicial functions, the three branches of government, but also by instituting a federal system, they preserved immense and sovereign rights to the local communities, and by all these means they have maintained, often at some inconvenience, a system of law and liberty under which they thrived and reached the physical and, at this moment," he says, "the moral leadership of the world." I love that quote. Churchill's perspective on Islam, this one may surprise you. "The fact that in Mohammedan law, Every woman must belong to some man as his absolute property, either as a child, a wife, or a concubine, must delay the final extinction of slavery until the faith of Islam has ceased to be a great power among men. Individual Muslims may show splendid qualities. Thousands become the brave and loyal soldiers of the queen. All know how to die. But the influence of the religion paralyzes the social development of those who follow it. No stronger retrograde force exists in the world. Far from being moribund or dying, Mohammedanism is a militant and proselytizing faith. Here's a quote from Churchill about British appeasers after the decision was made in 1933 not to rearm in response to the Nazi threat. He knew this lack of foresight would lead to war, and he wrote, "It's much better for parties and politicians to be turned out of office than to imperil the life of the nation." Amen to that. You might be interested to know how Churchill felt about the American press, or what he called journalism. This is how he described it. "The essence of American journalism is vulgarity divested of truth. They're, speaking of Americans, their best papers write for a class of snotty housemaids and footmen. And even the nicest people here have so much vitiated their taste as to appreciate the style." I think that last sentence means that the British are copying their American cousins.
Well, he pulled no punches there.
Yeah. Here are two other prescient statements made by Sir Winston. "The Americans can always be trusted to do the right thing, once all other possibilities have been exhausted." That is a very interesting comment. And here's another. "Silly people, and there are many, not only in enemy countries, might discount the force of the United States. Some said they were soft, others that they would never be united. They would fool around at a distance. They would never come to grips. They would never stand bloodletting. Their democracy and system of recurrent elections would paralyze their war horizon to friend or foe. Others said that we should recognize the weakness of this numerous but remote, wealthy, and talkative people." That's what they say about us. "But I had studied the American Civil War, fought out to the last desperate inch." And he goes on to talk about World War II and how the Americans gave their blood, gave their wealth, and fought to the last battle for liberty. Hmm. And, of course, that saved Britain, mm-hmm, as well as the United States and the rest of the free world. Alas, I've run out of space and time for this discussion. There are hundreds of other quotes that are relevant to our political circumstances and to the upcoming election. As for the views of Winston Churchill as compared to those of Barack Obama, let me remind you that on Inauguration Day 2009, one of the first decisions the new president made was to send back to the British government a bronze bust of none other than Winston Churchill, mm-hmm, thereby insulting our allies from his first day in office. Perhaps we now know why. Obama and Churchill's perspectives on the world and on governmental policies are radically different. I'll close by reminding you again to vote on November the 2nd, 2010. How you mark your ballots is your business. The important thing is that you let your voices be heard and that you help select the leaders and the policies that will guide this country for the next 2 years and longer. America does indeed stand at a crossroads that will determine the direction it takes in years to come. I pray that you will join millions of your countrymen at the polls on Election Day. May God's blessings be on you and on this great nation.
Well, what a passionate message from our Family Talk host, Dr. James Dobson. And it's so timely as we're literally just weeks away from the election day here in the U.S. As he indicated there, this really could be one of the most important elections in our lifetime. So please exercise your right and privilege and go out and vote. Now, if you'd like a copy of this October newsletter, which Dr. Dobson just shared, either for your own reference or to pass along to someone else, ask for it when you give us a call, 877-732-6825, or you can find that also online at myfamilytalk.com. Also online there, you'll be able to see a picture of that wonderful painting of Sir Winston Churchill, which is hanging right outside Dr. Dobson's office. Take a look at that, myfamilytalk.com. Also there, you'll want to sign up to be on the Family Talk mailing list so that you will regularly receive information like this from Dr. Dobson. One last time, the phone number, 877-732-6825, or online at myfamilytalk.com.